For June 30th, 2023, we talk about Street Fighter VI, Dungeons & Dragons 5e, Diablo 4, and What the Car 3. I mean, What the Car. It's just What the Car. Welcome to the 463rd level.
My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Jala, welcome back.
Thank you. I realized I had not been on this month, and it was like, oh, snap.
Yeah. And Ben was kind enough to come down with an illness. So
that's what happens. I threw him in the cistern and he got sick.
He's really
he went and exposed himself intentionally to give Jala some space to play.
Yeah, so. He's a really selfless guy. What's going on?
I won a bush knife from a blacksmith that I follow on Twitter named Randall Blademaker, who has some really baller stuff.
Man, he was born for that career.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's
named Randall Blademaker.
R Blademaker on Twitter, so folks could go check out his work and everything.
Nice.
Yeah, so very cool, very cool. Mm-hmm. I was very excited about that. And then also other fun stuff is that my Jala Chan's Place friends bought me the Street Fighter VI game for my birthday as a collective thing, because you know that game is like $7,000. Not really, I mean, but it's like full price,
it's
new game, expensive, freaking, yeah. And I don't have money, so they were kind enough to give that to me. So I will talk a little tiny bit about that in the grind, but I recently got it. I haven't played a whole lot, but I will talk about it.
Yeah, nice. Well, that was very nice of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And they gave it to me like a month early just because they knew that I really wanted to play. And like everybody else was talking about it. And I'm like, sad panda in the corner. So they just decided to give it to me. Like, please just give this person this thing and maybe make them stop being sad panda in the corner. It's bringing me down, you know?
I have so little concept of time. Like just how quickly this year has gone by that you said they got it for your birthday. And I thought, oh, nice. A late birthday gift. I know that your birthday is in July, Jala, as we say.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But in my head, we were far earlier in the year where it would make sense that would be a late gift instead of an early gift. So
I know, like, this whole year is just kind of wild. The fact that we're like at the end of June right now is just, I don't know. I can't really wrap. I'm like, 4th of July is next week. What is going on?
Earlier tonight, I was talking with Jen. She's like, oh, we haven't heard from these friends that always do a 4th of July party.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, well, they did it Memorial Day last year, like, because it was so recent. It can't have. Oh, my God. We're already back around to 4th of July. So, yeah. Nuts.
Oh, man. David, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much. I'm back home in Mansfield, doing a visit.
Cool.
Did a run out today to the leather shop and the fabric store up in Amish country. So got some lining fabric for a jacket I'm working on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, that's about it. Been keeping on.
You can find some cool stuff out in Amish country. There are lots of cool old stuff. It's not all oak furniture and hard candies.
maybe mostly, but actually, I think I meant to get a snap a picture of it on the way back. One of the Amish, I don't know, restaurants or whatever sold boba tea.
Oh.
Okay.
Nice.
All right.
Hey, you know, other cultures don't have a they don't have a monopoly on tapioca beads. That's what's in boba. Is that what that is?
I'm convinced it's frog eggs, but
actually, I'll put a picture in the Slack. I had an encounter with boba tea recently that I love. And my kids did not quite have the same reaction. So let me see if I can find that.
Now, Nice. Well, I've got this will make me sound like a jerk. There are things going on with family wise that are made that make it a little bit unpredictable. But if I can manage to get out, we should meet up, David.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Nice. I'm not going to. Dennis is going to be searching for that picture. So he'll probably.
I found it.
Yeah. Boom. You found it. Let's see here. Going into the chat. Where are we at?
Should be come through any moment now.
Oh, he didn't expect it. He didn't expect it. Yeah.
Like he almost went for it, and then there was a thought, and then that happened. It was like, no.
Yeah.
And just let it roll out onto the table. Which
I just for me, food texture has been a big thing my entire life. Mm-hmm. More so when I was a kid, but I really associate boba tea seems like it'd be a varsity texture for a kid to deal with.
Yeah,
for I think it's a really fun texture, but
see, for me, I'm also not a kid. Like seal thing over top of it kind of bothers me. I know that is definitely how Umbrella Corp would package a thing.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Dennis, how about you? Well, what's going on besides exposing your children to exotic textures?
That place also had rolled ice cream, and they were big fans of that. So made up for it. I was at Origins this past week.
Oh, that's right.
No big deal. First time at a convention that I actually had product to sell for Deck of Wonders. Since I'm sending pictures left and right, and this is, it's the perfect thing for an audio medium.
We do it on Abject Suffering all the time.
Yeah. I will pop a picture of my booth up into there. But it was phenomenal. Being able to actually sell the game, have people be into it. The number of people that came up to the booth and were like, I backed. It's awesome. Love the game so much. Doing expansions? Like, just I never would have expected that. So,
That's great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. If you listened and you swung by, thank you so much.
Did anybody say like, hey, I listened to the show?
There was at least I'm trying to remember now. No, no one mentioned the show at the con, but I think there were some people who said they might be at the con in the Slack channel.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it was all such a whirlwind while you're there that like. I just pitched nonstop, and I probably am like saying the pitch for Deck of Wonders in my sleep.
Oh yeah.
Since I've been back, just because like it was nonstop. Like talk about the idea of the game, show the little one turn demo, make a transaction if that's what they're going to do, or say bye, and then the next person's up at the booth, then you're doing it again. And I was one man show, so I I did not move from behind that table for the 8 hours a day or what have you that the con was going. But like I loved every second of it. It was so much freaking fun. And obviously like hugely validating. Like that's
that's badass.
Cannot be understated.
I mean, to have it go into real life, you know, like actually, you know, make it real. I mean, for me, you know, I know that my job is real. It has to be, please. But like those times when you go to a physical place and, you know, enact something, whether or not you're like meeting people who are like fans or whatever, that is separate from it. But like to actually leave your house and do something outside of your usual bubble with it.
I feel that so hard.
Yeah.
So, that was super exciting. Foreteller, the like audio narration app that Deck of Wonders is a part of, did a party one of the nights, and they turned the basement of a bar into a dungeon.
That's
like
cool.
A D&D dungeon complete with gelatinous cube.
Yay.
And so I'm just gonna be slinging these pictures left and right, but it was so much
jello.
oh god yeah. But it was like, you know, green see-through tarps made to look like a cube that went from floor to ceiling. And then there was something going on with black lights in the inside that it was very luminous. And you could go inside and get pictures of you like stuck inside the gelatinous cube. So, you know, all the really fun, nerdy stuff. And that's actually where the majority of my, games discussion will come from. So normally I would be using the games that I played at Origins to shoehorn gaming talk into the banter.
Okay.
Instead I'm going to use it as what I played this week. So
yeah, no, you're just going to, you're going to use it. To give us warning. I gotta say, those I really like your stands, like the yeah. graphic stands that are there.
Yes.
I'd never seen one like the larger one.
This was its first outing. That yeah. was the backdrop is a giant picture of Cullen, who's the first like villain of the game. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of the you want to say poster child, but you know, like a poster child that you're supposed to hate.
Yeah, yeah. It's that is like the face or cover image that I associate.
Up there challenging passersby, and there's a forest troll as well. Yeah, I think it came together very nicely. And cannot wait to do another con. Gen Con's coming up. I'll start pumping that now. My stuff is going to be in Lauren, the illustrator's booth. That is table 42 in the art show.
Oh, that's a blessed number to have at a GeekCon. Yeah.
And here's something that I did not know, because Lauren is far too modest. She is doing the cover art for Gen Con's program this year.
Holy cow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So that art is already out there and circulating. They have a whole blog post interviewing her about it. It is beautiful. And I'm just so excited for her. So excited to be able to be at her booth. Everything's coming up Deck of Wonders right now.
No, and she's doing big stuff too, isn't she? Like, you, I know at one point you said that she was doing like big comic publisher stuff.
Yeah, she had a cover for a Black Panther issue in March.
Nice.
And yeah, it's badass. So she is a badass all around. I can't wait to be there and actually like hang out with her in person again. She wasn't able to get to Origins. But yeah, it's a lot of exciting stuff happening. And like I said, the Origins went as well as it possibly could have.
Oh, that's awesome to hear.
Has me excited to do it again. Yeah. I'll pop in as well. I bought myself a new playmat. I'm going to pull up the corner here so I can read who did it. It's art by Brent Chumley. And I'll put that into the chat as well. But upgraded, I got a significantly larger mouse pad.
Oh yeah.
Than I have had before. So nice. All kinds of good geek stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I got nothing aside from aforementioned family thing. It's been raining up here, so I've not been able to get out in the woods for more than a week. Mm-hmm. So kind of going nuts with that. But yeah, that's a get out in the woods makes it sound like I need to be just like a feral bear person. No,
you don't not need to be a feral bear person.
I need to retrain my spells. Damn it. I haven't been able to swap out my spell list for like the entire level.
Yeah. That mouse pad is cute. Yeah. So that's really all that's going on is stuff that I haven't been doing and spending more time at the gym in lieu of that, which is good because, you know, keep the habit going. But also when I finish there, I immediately feel like falling asleep. I just get home and just want to, I'm the sleepiest boy who's ever been. So
I feel you on that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we should talk about some games, and to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show with the grind, the multiplayer and the end boss. And why don't we get started? Oh, actually no, back up. No recording next week because of July the 4th. We record on Tuesdays. July the 4th is on a Tuesday. I don't want to have us record on a holiday. So no episode next week. Returning the week after that. Okay, cool. Multiplayer and the grind. And why don't we get started with...
The grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, what you been playing?
Okay, so I have continued to play Fire Emblem Engage because, you know, I took a hiatus from it for a little bit, and then I got back to it. I'm on hour 62.
So you re-engaged?
Whoa, 62.
62.
Nice.
I'm on chapter 20 out of 26 of the main game.
So it's holding your attention pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. Like I got like 30 or 40 hours in before I set it down, and I had to set it down because I had other assignment play. Because I had the Resident Evil 4 episode of Tales of the Backlog to do, and then I had Metroid Fusion to do for my podcast. You know, Jala Chan's Place, that'll be next week actually when that drops. By the time we're recording, so There is no level that week, so that means you can listen to that if you like Fusion or don't like Fusion or whatever. It's a 3.5 hour long episode. It's freaking massive. Yeah. It's a very good episode, though. I will tell you that. It's very good. So anyway, but after all of that assignment play, I got back to this game. And I finished all of the Divine Paralogues, which are from the DLC, and that's where you unlock extra emblem bracelets. So you have extra emblems that you can assign to your units in battle during the main quests. So I did that, and then I also finished all of the regular paralogues that show up as you play. So the regular paralogues in there, the way that they work them in is those paralogues are not like random missions. They have like skirmishes and training battles and stuff on the map that you can play, you know, anytime you want to, if you want to grind. But the paralogues themselves are always about one of the emblems that you have from the mainline quests.
Mm-hmm.
And in these, you fight against one of those emblems on a field of battle, which is a recreation of a map of story significance to that emblem's game. So, you know, like when it's one from like three houses, it's a one particular really notable field of battle where, you know, major plot story stuff happens and this, that, and the other. And, you know, you have to fight Boleth there, of course, and whatever. And the emblem is, of course, not usable in your set of emblems for the duration of that battle. And whenever you win that battle, you unlock the max bond level with them, which allows you and your units to bond with the emblem past the original level cap of 10 up to level 20 to get additional skill unlocks. Because the inheritance system that was present in some of the other Fire Emblem games, you know, with children and stuff like that.
Yeah, from Awakening onward.
Yeah, as well. Actually, it was before that, too, that some of the units could get married. But anyway, I have an I have a Fire Emblem episode coming up, too. That's another reason I got to finish this. This is also assignment play.
Your content creator disease is progressing nicely.
Right. Well, I decided I was going to tackle the whole IP. So luck to
Jesus.
Me. Yeah. So talking in broad strokes. But anyway, the inheritance system, though, was switched from being like a lineage because you had two characters copulate and have children to now it's just like you inherit them when your people fight alongside, paired up with an emblem via an emblem ring. And then the longer they fight together, they form a bond and then they unlock. Basically, it unlocks both skills that are available to that unit using that emblem in battle, like on the active map. So like they have more and more things available to them as they bond with that emblem. But then also they can inherit skills like just for their own use when they are not using that ring.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a dual thing. Like you can actually potentially have them bond with a couple of emblems and then just have all of the skill upgrades of one and then be paired with another one and then just have everything maxed out. You know, I'm not really a min-max player at all. So I'm very haphazard. Like all of my emblems and all of the skills everybody has are just like nonsense. It makes more sense now, but like at first I had no idea what characters I was going to get, if they would change classes, you know, like what emblems they were going to be. Like I didn't know any of that and I didn't bother looking it up. So as a result, it's pretty willy-nilly. But I feel like this game, it struck me that this is kind of like Final Fantasy Tactics in that it would be a lot smoother on a replay, mechanically speaking, because you would be familiar with all of that.
Yes.
So that's about all I really have to say about that. Like, you know, the story stuff, I got even more people in this game. It feels too, and I don't know if it's just because, you know, I've been talking a lot of Fire Emblem stuff recently, you know, thinking about the IP as a whole or anything, but like, I really feel like this game needs the permadeath in it, even though like I put it on casual and I put it on normal mode just because I was like, I just want to see the story the first time through and figure out what's going on before I, you know, try to up the ante.
Yeah.
And then like on a replay, that's when I can fiddle with all of that stuff. But boy, it makes me tired to have to switch out all these units and try to keep everybody adequately leveled and stuff.
The game's designed for attrition.
It is. Mm-hmm. So it's designed for you to like lose units. And so like having this many units, it's like, I have like seven of you guys. I really don't need another one, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but that's why you can reclass them and this, that, and the other, but that takes work. So
here's a question. Now that you've played more of it, do they include characters or content from the Sacred Stones? Because if they were not cowards, they would bring it in, even though that is out of continuity.
Remind me what characters are in there, because I actually don't remember the names of the things as much as the characters.
There's a blue-haired one. I think it's a guy. I think there's a green-haired girl.
Oh, you don't know who they were. Okay, I'm going to have to look up and see which one that is. Like, who are the main characters in Sacred Stones?
Yeah.
So
I think Alex is a name that rings a bell. Oh,
that's Erica and what's his head? Yeah, they've got them in there.
Erica and Ephraim, yes.
Yeah, those guys.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're in there.
Okay.
Like, I think they have representation for, if not all of them, at least a large portion of the games.
And then there are no longer, they are no longer cowards.
Well, what's cool about Erica and Ephraim is that, like, they are both in one ring because they are twins, and you can toggle between which one you want to have active.
Hmm.
And you can, like, switch between them, and they have different skills and stuff available to them.
Nice. So.
Any other questions about Fire Emblem Engage, which I continue to play?
No.
Cool. So you're at hour 62.
Yeah.
Give me a guess right now how many hours in you will be when you decide you're done with the game.
I'm not like grinding at all. I am just doing the paralogs. Oh, I forgot to say I also did the first of the Fel Xenologs, which is a totally different DLC thing that's like a totally different story about something set in the future. I don't know what it's all about, because I only played one map of it. I don't know how long it is. It's a DLC thing. I have all of the DLC and I have the main game. I am not going through any skirmishes or any training battles. All I am doing is the mainline stuff and then just going through the paralogs to unlock stuff. So I will be done when the missions are done and there's no more missions. That's when I will be done.
All right. Fair enough.
And I've got seven more of those because I'm on 20, but I haven't started that map yet. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've got no more questions. Great. Us to the sixes.
Yeah, the sixes. So the next thing is Street Fighter VI, which, again, I haven't played a whole lot of. I've played like 3 hours of. Unfortunately, from the beta, like if I had made my critter, my entity, my avatar in the demo, then it would have ported over to the main game, but I did not. I made it in the beta, which was actually, I found out, a version of the game that was developed as of like a year ago. So it's like an older version that doesn't actually mesh up with the main game, like the way it is now, you know, programming wise. So I lost my perfect model that I spent all that time making in the beta, and I tried to remake it, and Dave is like looking at me and looking at the thing, and he's like, I think this is right. And then my little critter comes out, and I'm trying to do like the world tour or whatever it's called, and then like I'm like, God, Dave, that looks terrible. I look like some kind of homunculus. It's so bad. So like I spent a lot of time trying the first time to get it, and then like the second time I booted it up, I'm like, okay, I have to try to fix it. And now it's better. I have apparently been seeing like it's really hard unless you go with the default bodies to make a character that looks, you know, like a human rather than some kind of homunculus critter. So that's probably part of the reason why people are, you know, min-maxing everything and making them look really wild. So, but of course, like I don't have like a typical body shape, let alone any of the presets that they've got. So
right, you gotta get the sliders.
Yeah, and since I'm making my character look more like me, like it's like, okay, I gotta mess around with this. But still kind of dumpy on the lady character. That looks kind of meh, but that's okay. Anyway, I'll cover the avatar up with a bunch of clothes as soon as I can unlock them.
You can't edit it.
It's like the inverse of every other online game.
Yeah, it's not super beautified 1,000%. It's like it's like the Elder Scrolls problem.
Oh yeah.
So it's not quite as bad as that, but it's the Elder Scrolls problem. So yeah, you can edit what they are wearing. Like you can go and get fashions, and depending upon where you're getting them, if you buy fashion stuff from the Battle Hub, which is like that online social area where you can spectate matches, play other people. And, you know, fight against them in there. You can kind of hang out and take, you know, screenshot picture things and I don't know, some other stuff like that. It's more of a social area. You can go there and you can buy stuff, but it's just cosmetic. It doesn't actually affect any of your stats. Or if you're playing the world tour or whatever it's called, the mode where you have your little critter and you're running them around through a bunch of different areas, learning under different masters to make your fighting style unique to you that has moves inherited from a bunch of different characters. If you're going through that mode, you can give the character accessories that actually will up their strength, up their kicking force or whatever, you know, their defense. So, you know, like there are stat boosts on those associated with those. So, yeah. And I spent a long time just wandering around. Like I went into the world tour mode and you start out with Luke and he's like, yeah, I'm going to teach you the stuff, the whatever. And, you know, you wander around in the city and, you know, you fight people, random people on the street, just anybody. And they all have different levels and like they basically like tap your fist and they're like, yeah, everybody's happy to fight you. And there's also thugs that have cardboard boxes on their heads with little eye holes poked out. And they're like, you know, hooligans that'll come and fight you and they will
they're
gang
hiding
up on you.
From the Yakuza cast.
Right.
just cowering from Kiryu.
Well, and they will just like fight you en masse. And then you have like a whole bunch of them, like a whole bunch of them jumped me and I had, I don't know, like five or six and they kept on jumping more, like more of them kept on showing up on the screen. I'm like, God, when are they going to be done with this?
Yeah.
You know, I found a superhero on a roof who's just like standing heroically. And I forget what they called him, some kind of nonsense name, but he's like in a hero outfit and he's just standing there on a rooftop. And, you know, he's like, I am a hero. I am overlooking the city. But if you talk to him, he gives you a goodie. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So like there's a bunch of weird random stuff in there that's fun. And the different people on the street have different fighting styles. So, you know, like apparently everybody trains under some master or another. And so, you know, different ones have different styles that you can test your skills against.
What style of character do you have? Are you running?
Well, you start out with only two moves of Luke's. And okay. Like you can unlock as you continue to go more of his moves. And then each time you go unlock different characters as you go through that world tour mode, like the next one is Chun-Li in Chinatown. I just got to her and I just unlocked some moves from her, but I haven't actually, you know, done anything else, you know, to get more skills to make it more of my own unique fighting style with a bunch of moves from different people. So right now I'm rolling with like two of Luke's moves and one of Chun-Li's. And I still have to unlock another skill tier so that I can put another skill in there. But you can have four ground skills and then four aerial moves. And then you can do it like a special move. And depending upon what master you are assigning yourself to at the time, like you can train up your style points with that particular master, which unlocks additional skills and, you know, conversations and stuff with that master. So basically you can pick a track. Like if you really hate Chun-Li's fighting style, you don't want to do her, then you can just go through it for the story part and then just never choose her again, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like forcing you to use stuff you don't really want. So that's cool.
Is there any sort of I don't know, like competitive structure or something like that for the player made characters, or the competitive modes only the, I know, canon characters, for lack of a better term?
I don't know yet, because I'm not playing online with anybody at this point. I don't have, like, I will eventually join the folks that got me the game, and I will, you know, link up with them and then ask them more questions about it actively. But like, I had been kind of, again, sad panda in the corner. So I didn't really, I was like, I don't know when I'm ever going to play this game. I don't want to read about it right now. I'll just be sad. And so I didn't read anything that they were discussing about it. And now that I've got it, like, I have not gotten to a point to figure out if there is a competitive mode for the homunculus characters or not. I don't know if like there's a place or if people just like wander around in the world tour mode and you can just like, you know, invite them to have a match with you or anything, or I don't know. I have not figured that out yet. But I will. So far, the most time that I've spent has been in just the world tour mode, messing with my little critter. Just because it's like weird and different, you know, like this is like kind of an RPG, because you have your life bar and, you know, it's going down every time you get into a fight, and you have items that you can use in a menu in the middle of your battle to boost your stats and stuff or to heal you. And then after battle, you can go to like food trucks and stuff and replenish your health. So, you know, it's got like RPG elements to it. And of course, there's like a story, and you can do like a skill tree. You can unlock different stuff to strengthen like your kicks or your punches, or I want a discount at the market or whatever. And like, you know, there's a skill tree that you have to pick to move your way up as you gain levels. So, you know, I'm messing with that for now just because it's unique. I did run through arcade mode once with Cammy, and I have not played Street Fighter in so long. Like the first time I pulled it up, and then like also I haven't played Street Fighter in a long time, and I don't know these weirdos in this game. So, you know, like I don't know what all of their moves are, because I don't know who they are and everything and how they play. So, you know, every single match is a surprise, because none of the people I fought were like any of the characters that I know from Street Fighter. So, you know, I ran through it, but it was fun because I'm like, oh my God, I can't get used to this. What's the button for the XYZ? Because like, you know, there's stuff in this game that wasn't in prior games. Like,
basically like an alternate super meter.
Yeah. There's like a different super meter, but then there's also, different ways to do like different types of combos and doing like punishment counters and all different kinds of stuff. So like some of the stuff I'm like, I actually really need to go back and look at my buttons, you know, like look at the button mapping, or the button mapping.
The what mapping?
Buttons.
Okay, cool.
So I need to look at that again just to figure out what it's called, and then like go do the tutorial on that again, because like I ran through the tutorial the first time I booted it up, but it was just such a long tutorial that that stuff fell out of my head, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. No. I retained some of it. But yeah, like I like Cammy. I've always liked Cammy. She's been kind of like one of my main characters that I play Street Fighter with since her first appearance. So it was fun to play her. And I look forward to, I'm going to have to spend a lot of time just trying to figure out all the moves of all the different characters and see too if there's another character that I want to spend some time learning. Because as much as I like Cammy, it's like, you know, I don't always want to play like a super anti-air kind of character. Like sometimes I want to play something else. So, you know,
it's not always the matchup you need.
Yeah. And it's not always the matchup I need. So, you know, I want to do a little bit of variety. Mm-hmm. So I got to do some studying up on these characters and things, but that is yet to come. I have been having a lot of fun with it, even just with playing with my weird homunculus character. You know, my critter, if you will. So
nice.
I plan to challenge the superhero as soon as I can, but he's level 29 and I think I reach level 10. So okay. I have a while yet before I can fight him, but I'm going to the moment I can.
Nice. Let's hope he wasn't doing anything truly important, because if he's dead, then the world will fall apart.
He doesn't. They don't die. They just keep walking down the street afterwards. They're cool.
This one does. It's a real turn.
Right. Right.
Nice.
Anything else about that that anybody have questions of?
No.
Okay. The other six. Resident Evil 6. Yes, I'm playing Resident Evil 6 again.
Mm-hmm. I kind of figure you're always at least partway through one playthrough of that or another with somebody.
I had been partway through a playthrough of that with somebody, and I don't remember who it was, but the last time I played it was like a few years ago. So I did a fresh start again, this time with Nick, and I'm halfway through Leon and Helena's campaign with Nick. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was just streaming it on my Discord server, and then Adam Bucherri popped in and asked me how it felt to play after having played Resident Evil 4 Remake, and I felt like this would be a really good thing to bring to the show and chat about, since it's mostly mechanics and presentational stuff. There's like no spoiler involved things.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it would be spoilers for an 18-year-old and a let's say 12-year-old game respectively. I think we're good.
Yeah, but I mean, like, talking remake, although, like, honestly, when I started comparing it to stuff, I'm like comparing it to OG Resident Evil 4 and also Resident Evil 4 Remake. I'm not talking about like every Resident Evil. I'm just talking those are like, you know, in recent conversation.
And by the 18 and the 11, I'm talking about RE4 original and 6. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so like go into it, kind of like, what's your thesis and the comparison between these?
Well, I've got a lot of different things, and I was kind of just starting with literally the beginning of 6, because, mm-hmm. you know, I was thinking through it, and, you know, once you gain control of your character after the initial cutscene, you can't immediately use the entire verb set. You're walking slow. The camera is sometimes fixing itself to a point. Your characters are really limited. Your actions are limited. And they're doing this because they are setting the mood. It's the beginning. It's one of the few places in the game that leans into horror. And the controls, the camera work, and the enemy AI don't on their own present a level of tension that you get from like 4R. So instead of using the environmental storytelling and like the sound design and stuff to make it creepy, instead, it's like, you know, just controlling stuff and taking stuff away from you, which doesn't feel great. I mean, it's really annoying, actually, especially if you played it as many hours as I have. So, you know, like that was like, I'm not a big fan of this. Now, some of the lighting and stuff in the beginning is still really cool. Some of the camera work when they, you know, put it focused at stuff like the lightning flashing in the windows with the, you know, drapes billowing or whatever, like, and the balloons falling on the floor. Like, that's really cool. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you could have done that and also not jerked away all the control from me at the same time, you know?
Yeah. They're trying to give you a taste of something that they're going to stringently deny you for the rest of the, you know, 16 hours that you are playing this game.
And that's
which is atmosphere and mood. Yeah.
Well, that's what led me to think, okay, so what actually were the points in Resident Evil 6 that are sort of horror-ish? So most of them are from Leon's campaign. There's the beginning of Leon's campaign in the town. That's hectic. Mm-hmm. That's frantic. It's scary. They do the, you know, tension music and, you know, just a lot of wild stuff going on. There's the lab sequence where you find out what happened to Deborah. And Dave says, okay, that's really like all of that is just horror movie stuff. The Chinese market with the regenerators, that one is very horror. Mm-hmm. When the gas hits China and you're in the Humvee with the dramatic music and the ash floating and stuff, like that's really traumatic. The snake level with your men taken out one by one when you're playing Chris and Piers. The part where Ustinak is rising out of the lava and grabs onto the sled where Jake and Sherry are barely holding on. And like the fight between Ada and the chainsaw critter on the train. Those are like the only ones I can. And there's like one per other campaign other than Leon's, which has like 4.
I forget which campaign has the docks with the chainsaw guys.
The docks with the chainsaw guys is going to be Jake and Sherry.
Gotcha. I remember that being like pretty, I don't know. It's so hard to say scary because that is such a non-fungible term, but like, let's say startling and tense.
Yeah. Well, especially when they're under the water, that was pretty cool when they're all lit up and under the water. Yeah, and stuff.
The graphics, at least for that, are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some other things. So enemy AI is a lot tighter and more responsive in Resident Evil 4 Remake. Of course, the way that they attempt to create pressure in 6 is so different than 4 or 4R because
it's numbers.
In 6, it is. Yeah, it's areas where you're forced to split off from your partner that creates tension, or fighting armored enemies, or from infinispawn zombies or Joavo, and that's it. And when you're split off from your companion and you each have asymmetrical activities, that's effective in, you know, in the regard of making tension, because you know, like, you and your partner can't talk it out, you know, like you're doing different stuff. Mm-hmm. But it can also be really frustrating if your partner keeps failing and thus killing you in the process. So depending upon the level of skill of the player or the AI. And then infinispawn, at least in this instance, I can't speak for every instance, because the moment I do, somebody's going to be like, well, actually, and at me on Twitter. Don't at me. Infinispawn,
don't at me, bro.
Infinispawn feels sloppy. It's sloppy difficulty ramping and difficult, you know, sloppy pushing you forward, like getting the momentum going by making you go because there's so many stuff, you know, so many things coming after you. And that's just, that's like artificial pacing. It's not great. So if somebody skipped playing 5 and went from OG Resident Evil 4 to 6, I could see why they would hate it. If they feel married to what Capcom is doing in 4, because while 4 is a horror action game, 6 is an action game with some horror set dressing, and some of the core design elements feel lazy when they're reined in, when they reined everything in so well in 4. So
yeah,
the gameplay cuts away to cutscenes a lot. Mm-hmm. With an embarrassment of QTE sequences. So there's also no accessibility options for the QTEs. You just have to mash buttons or time it or whatever you're doing. So the lack of accessibility sucks. The HUD changing for each campaign is fun, but the quick toggle for weapons and items, which I absolutely loved before, actually seems clumsy now, because in Resident Evil 4 Remake, you have assignable mapping, so you don't accidentally pull the Magnum when you meant to use the AR.
Yes. Mm. It's actually like a really, really good system in RE2. I mean, because they pull it from, I mean, I forget if 7 had the two layers of hotkeys on there, but it was definitely an 8.
Yeah. And that mapping. And again, like, I'm, even though I played 8, I'm really only just talking like 4 and 4R, because that was the prompt was given to me. And I was like, oh, but that's also the one that's in current, you know, discussion. So so anyway, there's also some predetermined items, but the item drops otherwise feel really randomized rather than responsive to your play style and your needs, which is, you know, responsive item drops are a 4 and 4R thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as this is an action game, you get a lot more explosives and you get skill points rather than currency. So your upgrades are via your skill unlocks rather than upgrading your weapons. So like, your skill unlocks are like lock on, rock steady, defense. And those are things that you have to unlock and then equip. And you can only have 3 set up at a time. And that's how they do it, rather than having your weapons unlock new upgrades and things. So each character starts with a slightly different handgun and a secondary weapon, which varies, like a shotgun for Helena, a sniper rifle for Piers. But from there, both of the characters in each of the different campaigns acquire the same gun. So by the end of the game, you have weapon bloat, where in 4 and 4R, they force you to make decisions about what you want to keep on your, you know, in your case. Although 4R happens to have like a storage unit that you can use for weapons and first aid sprays that is tied to your typewriter. So you can actually store stuff if you don't want to have it in your current kit, but you might want it the next chapter. So there's also like a lot of dialogue between Leon and Helena, for example, since I'm in the middle of that campaign, but they completely lack the chemistry of Leon and Ashley. But that's partially, I hate Helena. I've never liked that character.
she has
no character.
She is quite bland. Like, they give her it's so weird because like the more common scenario is a character who has like a lot of traits but no motivation.
Yeah.
And Helena, she has no traits, but she is just driven by revenge.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, both of those are unsatisfying, but like, I don't know. You ask anybody to bring up their even like top five favorite Resident Evil characters, they will forget that Helena even exists.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also mean,
even top five characters in Resident Evil 6.
Yeah, right. So I would also say that Chris and Piers also lack chemistry for the first half because Chris is in such a PTSD roid rage that like he can't be a character for like half of that campaign. And so The only campaign that actually has really fun dialogue, legitimately fun interchanges with each other is the Jake and Sherry one.
Oh, yeah. Jake and Sherry, like that campaign is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I just wanted to comment, like the villains in 5 and 6 both fail to be as fun as the villains in 4. And no. I mean, 4 OG, not remake, because I actually
prefer them. Where they tone stuff
down. Wait. No. Yeah. 4 does not have a dude surfing on lava, though.
Oh, you're talking about 5, or does somebody in 6 surf on lava?
Ustinak, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah.
He comes back out Terminator style.
Think about it. We're all surfing on lava right now.
the dude who's following you throughout the entire campaign.
Yeah, the Ustinak.
Oh, yeah.
So, some of the boss fights, though, I will say some of the boss fights in 6 are neat. Like the Lepotitsa fights in the church and the airplane are both really good. Like whenever that titty monster shows up, I can't say whenever the titty monster shows up, it's a good time. But whenever the titty monster shows up, it's a good time. The invisible snake fight is fun because it's just different than everything else that they're doing. The dual Gigante fight with the chainsaw or the chain guns and the hectic swarms of Infinispawn enemies, like as much as that's Infinispawn and I don't like that, it serves a pretty good function there. And I like the way it works there. And then the Ustinak fight in the ice cave was really fun for me. And they also have some neat sequences like sneaking through the town of rampaging zombies and the Chinese market and the snake level and the Ustinak ice cave sneaking level. And even the underwater lab is a cool environment, although some of the worst QTEs are there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like the QTE thing. This was something that really stood out in talking about the RE4 remake for WoF, which is just a blanket removal of QTEs, force them to fill in those beats with stuff that is way more interesting.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, the knife fight against Krauser, right? Mm-hmm. Like Ashley's whole chapter alone, like they had to change it entirely, but that's just because they couldn't just make it a big, okay, you want to take a step? Reflex test. You want to take a step? Reflex test. Like it was just a positive that they removed that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say though that with RE6, the minute-to-minute actual gameplay still feels robust. It remains a solid improvement over 5 in terms of streamlining the controls, and melee is still hella fun with a bunch of multiple attacks and takedowns relevant to your positioning and the circumstances. Like, is there a knife in the zombie's chest? Health of the enemy. During some of these parts, the animation when you're doing your melee attacks, you have hit priority as well. So you can, depending on your timing, if you're really good with timing, you can do some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And you have knockdowns and stuns of various stages, depending on your weapon, the target, etc. You can recover mid-stagger by holding the sprint button. There is a large number of deadly combos that you can perform too. So like, there's a lot of different stuff that they have built into the melee just like the combat system in general that is fun and cool. And it really shows itself as being like a stepping stone for where they ended up going with the more action style gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I still appreciate the game for what it is, but also going back to it after, like all of the different iterations they've done since is just like, wow, it's an old game,
Yeah.
It's been a few years since I played it last, so.
I'm really happy that this network can continue to be the one place where people who think, hey, RE6 isn't that bad, they can come here for comfort. You are not alone, actually. Like, it's not as good as 4 or 4 Remake, but like, nobody should wish it out of existence.
There are literally dozens of us.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, like that's all I've really got for just broader commentary, at least at this point, insofar as, you know, comparison of 6 to 4 or 4R, since I played those recently as well. And I've actually played them more recently than I played 6.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I definitely noticed, and it was very apparent to me when I was going through 4R, just how much it leaned on stuff that they had learned from the action elements that, you know, they had done in previous games. And, you know, again, some of those animations from 4R are just, it looks like they are lifted 100% out of 6. So It's pretty wild.
Yeah. I mean, Leon's 4 fighting style and Jake's fighting style in RE6 are very similar, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and some of the enemy animations too. But Anyway, I digress. So that is all I've got on that. Anyone nice. Have any questions about this very old game that is like a legal adult now?
RE6 can finally drink with Chris at the beginning of RE6.
Yeah, is it registered to vote?
Yes, but it's libertarian.
Right.
Nice. It's fun to think about 6 again.
Yeah. Who's got some?
Dennis, since you've been doing cool tabletop stuff, I want to hear about tabletop stuff.
Yeah, I have been doing cool tabletop stuff. Specifically, I got to play Band of Blades as a one-shot while I was at Origins. So are you guys familiar at all with Blades in the Dark?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. For anyone listening who hasn't heard of it before, is only passingly familiar, it is a tabletop role-playing game system that has a really cool atmosphere and premise and some cool mechanics as well. So
it's like City of Thieves kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's Dishonored, the tabletop system, essentially. Yeah. You know, you are these thieves in a grimdark kind of city, literally surrounded by ectoplasm walls, keeping out ghosts or some such nonsense.
Or keeping them in.
Or keeping them in. That's right. but the, you know, the cool thing going on mechanically is, you know, you have your different skills and traits, but you can use literally any skill for any role. You just have to describe to the GM how it applies.
Yeah.
And then the GM will respond by saying, okay, you can roll that. Here's how risky it's going to be. And here's how effective it's going to be. And then you have a bunch of verbs to, like, you know, make it more or less risky and make it more or less effective, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. So really allows you to come at problems in your own way, in a very fun system. So Band of Blades is, I guess it's technically a different system built on top of Blades in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the story, like every campaign of Band of Blades is the same story. You just go through it different ways. You always start as part of this elite army called the Legion that holds back the darkness for this world. It's set in kind of like a medieval plus muskets, medieval plus gunpowder world.
Mm-hmm. AKA Ravenloft.
Yeah, kinda. It's got that vibe. With zombies avatars of the gods wandering around. But anyway, your fighting force has protected the world throughout the ages. And it's never broken before. And the campaign starts at a crucial battle where the Legion is soundly defeated. And you are given this like priceless artifact that is central to who the Legion is and told to run. and so your squad of players is making their way across the country to this keep to make a final stand for the Legion. To like, there's one last place now that it's all gone to hell that we might be able to hole up and make it through and not be completely wiped out. And that's what you're making your way towards. So really cool story. And at first when I heard like, oh, it's always this one path, I was like, eh, like really? That's kind of weird. And then I found out this game is XCOM.
Uh-oh.
this
Wait,
is
so
XCOM.
You mean that everyone specs sniper?
Potentially.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, like, I associate Blades in the Dark with being kind of rules light, like more of a storytelling kind of deal. Like, when you say, oh, this is XCOM, suddenly we're in like an Iron Kingdom kind of thing. Like, yeah. we're leaning toward like a tactical combat kind of deal. So, I'm completely thrown for a loop here.
Less so on. So, you know how like XCOM has the tactical lair and the base building lair?
Okay. Yeah.
So, it is like Blades in the Dark in the tactical lair. And then XCOM in the base building squad management layer.
Okay. So you're spending resources to get kind of like long-term advantages over the course of the same story that you run.
Mm-hmm. And making tough decisions against overwhelming odds. And specifically the way the squads work is very XCOM because, now I played only one character because this was a one shot, but over the course of a campaign, like an individual player at the table will play more than one character. And at the beginning of every mission, every excursion that you're sent on, you choose who you're going to take.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is always, a squad is always going, it will always contain, I think at least two rookies. And rookies, as you can imagine, are less powerful. I guess you always have a squad of five rookies with you. Excuse me, I remember now. You always have a squad of five rookies with you, and players can choose to be those rookies. But rookies will only ever have the chance to be promoted if a player plays as a rookie.
Okay.
So the character, you know, it is a less powerful character, but they have some special abilities as rookies that are unique. And the only way to get those abilities and to have them on a character is to have a rookie survive and get promoted up through the ranks.
Oh, that is so high stakes. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's your incentive for going in underpowered is like, if I can get this guy to survive, then I can build him into whatever class and he's still going to have these unique perks from being a rookie.
So like between battles, is there something that keeps them out of commission? Because like, I don't know, I think of XCOM campaign and the thing that forces you to rotate through your stock by stock. Mm-hmm. I mean, human beings with dreams. I think I saw one write a song the fact that they get injured, you know, for a certain amount and they've got like a recovery time. Like, are people like right back in them? Like, is there a downside to like bringing this rookie in and then just like getting him like limped across the finish line? Like, I got all of them across, even if he wasn't in one part, in one piece kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that is the, and they explicitly say like, all right, you know, if you're a specialist, I think they call the ones that have been promoted up. If you're a specialist, your job is to accomplish the mission. If mm-hmm. you're a rookie, your job is to survive.
Okay.
And that's literally like your success for you on this mission. You know, Blades in the Dark, another thing that it does is like between scores, if you're playing Blades in the Dark, or between excursions, if you're playing Band of Blades, the way you gain experience as you debrief the mission is you ask a series of questions related to your character and their background.
Mm-hmm.
And those questions are different based on the class. So like if you're playing a brawler, one of the questions might be like, did you solve a problem with brute force? Mm. And if the answer is yes, you get an experience point. And, you know, and so it truly is you level up by role-playing your character. For the rookie, it's basically like, are you alive right now?
Yeah.
And that's enough.
For the rookie, they just hold a mirror up to his mouth to see if he fogs it.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, is there an option for no, but I'm a zombie now?
You know, I would not be surprised if that was in the campaign somewhere. Didn't specifically happen to us, but I would believe it. The other interesting thing is, like I said, you always have a squad of five rookies. And as the specialist, you can kind of like direct those squads and have them do things. And part of the combat, or an added wrinkle to the combat that's specifically in Band of Blades, is what do they call it? It's like your force or your quantity, essentially, but quantity is the wrong word. Mm-hmm. The size of your force, your fighters, impacts how successful you can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so having the rookies, like assigning them to go with you, even though they're not going to be super helpful, gives you advantages, because now you've got at least four people firing on the target instead of one or what have you. Player controlled rookies, if they take damage, you know, they have, health. Non-player controlled rookies, if they take any damage whatsoever, they just die.
Oh, God.
So it's like you go into every mission knowing that probably a couple rookies are going to die.
Yeah, they're going to get redshirted.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mean playing past senior year.
Yeah.
So do you do the whole like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to bother to learn your name?
Oh, no. Well, the RGM made sure that we knew every single one of their names and every single one had a personality.
Oh, the Last of Us 2'd you. Yeah.
Yeah, there was Yelena. I can spit them right back out, guys. There was Yelena. She was like really, really good hearted. And actually, we were in a situation where like we needed to run, but we realized there were civilians stuck in this church. We kind of decided not to help them as much as we could have, maybe. Yelena almost left us over that. She's very like, we got to protect everyone.
Mm-hmm.
There was Two Feather, who was he said maybe two words the entire campaign, but you know, was leading us, and he's very, very sneaky. He patted me on the back at the end of the mission, and that was the most affection he'd ever shown. so like, yeah, all these rookies are, you know, depending on the GM, very well fleshed out. And you feel the weight of it when it's like, okay, like if I don't want them to take harm and they can't take any or they die, I need to take it myself. And that adds up real, real quick.
Now, does this, game support campaign play at all?
Yeah, so the idea is that you are going through that consistent campaign, like I mentioned at the start.
Oh, I'm sorry. When I say campaign game, I mean like playing indefinitely with the same characters.
No, specifically not. And then again, I thought that was so weird. I kind of see how it works now. Basically, you know, you get to the end, you have your final last stand, and if you want to keep on playing, you just like start a new campaign from a similar spot, from the beginning. Which is, yeah, it's a weird hybrid of like, you know, feels anathema to TTRPGs, honestly.
Although, yeah, that's actually been my long-term complaint with the Blades in the Dark games, is that they traditionally haven't supported that.
Indefinite play?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like, you know, in Blades in the Dark, your character is going to accrue traumas and stuff, you know, bad things over time that eventually like they're going to die, or you're going to have to retire them, because if you go out on one more score, you're going to die.
Right.
And you know, hopefully you have earned enough money in that time to allow them a happy retirement, as it were. As happy as one can be in a city filled with ghosts. But I mean, crossing back
that,
over into
that just sounds awesome.
Yeah. So
filled with ghosts or surrounded by ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to keep on hammering that. It is also a city where the only food available is mushroom based. So
yeah, no, that would be hell.
Unless you got a real thing for fungus, you're going to be in trouble. Yeah. But yeah, so the GM said that, you know, and he was very experienced with the game. You know, he loves running it because it is, you know, you say to someone, hey, you want to join my campaign? And they're like, you know, do I want to be committed to hanging out with you weekly or more for the next 10 years. Like, this takes the pressure off. It's like, look, we're going to start at point A, we're going to end at point B, and then we can do it again. We can do something else, or I can just never see you again. Like, you know, that it feels like a much more manageable commitment, and it feels good to just kind of like try getting a group together to then do something more permanent.
Nice.
But yeah, so really, really cool system, really cool ideas. Again, I love the XCOM elements from a squad management standpoint. There was more XCOM style things at that tactical, or excuse me, at that base building layer that I didn't really get to interact with because it, you know, we did a one shot instead of a campaign. But basically, like, you have to decide how to allocate resources between your squads. And so, like, you have two missions that you're going to run. For one mission, you're going to have guns, and for the other, you're not. Which one would you like to, you know, be equipped for? So, like, those kind of decisions are really cool, and I think it makes it so, you know, every time you sit down at the table playing through this campaign, you can be doing something radically different. You're not married to that character and that character's play style indefinitely, while still getting the cool aspects of, like, hey, I know this person. There's a personality here. There's story here that you can mess around with. So yeah, that was Band of Blades. Apparently it's out of print, so you can't buy it right now. If you see it in a store somewhere, snap it right up, because
I see 50 in stock on the book.
Oh, no way.
On the website. Yeah. Yeah, no.
Okay, yeah, so now I'm pissed.
Book and PDF for $45. Yeah.
Okay. I went to it's through, like, what is it, Indie Print Revolution or whatever that publisher is, same people that do Blades in the Dark. Mm-hmm. I went to their booth at Origins and I said, hey, do you have Band of Blades at the table? Cause I at least wanted to look through the book, and, you know, might've picked it up. And she's like, yeah, no, it's out of print. So, like, if you see it, get it, but you can't get it here anywhere. So filthy liars.
I mean, think maybe they were working with the information they had.
Yeah. That's probably more likely. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm amped up because my adrenaline is going from being in these missions, you know, where anyone can die at any time. Yeah. My character, as an aside, it was very fun. His name was Gabrador Zoyahov. We called him Gabrador the Labrador. He was basically, you know, a giant brute. He was Kronk from Emperor's New Groove, essentially.
Okay.
Like, you know, swallowed every piece of propaganda, hook, line, and sinker that he had ever heard about the Legion, and was very, very like, yeah, right, let's do it, and crashed through walls, etc., with no thought. that was fun to play. You know, stir some shit for the rest of the party that was trying to think tactically.
Nice.
Actually, that kind of transitions nicely to the next thing I've been playing.
Okay.
That was Band of Blades. I also have started playing in my first ever D&D 5e campaign. So I've done TTRPGs before, one shot, done some campaign stuff. I've never actually played the big Walmart of TTRPGs, Dungeons and Dragons. So I finally found a group. They were looking for someone to jump in, and I did. It's been a blast so far. But the character I'm playing is a forest gnome druid named Weirdgood. And the story is that this gnome, you know, grew up in a circle of druids that really put the dirty in dirty hippies.
Okay.
They're swamp druids. and his like eccentricity was considered a virtue, in that circle. And, many were kind of thinking of him as probably the next in line to lead. But before that could happen, an awful something, haven't figured out what that is, but an awful something wiped out his circle of druids and dried up his swamp.
Oh no.
So he kind of wandered out into the world, with more survivor's guilt than sanity, and kind of started exploring.
I'm gonna ask you to cut to a chase here. Tell me he is some kind of Gatormancer.
Yes, please.
I might know his first creature that he summoned was a weasel.
Okay.
And I've decided the group doesn't know this yet, and I don't know if they listen or not. You know, they're like, oh, what's the weasel's name? I'm like, weasel, duh. and so now everything I summon is going to be weasel.
Oh yeah.
Going to summon a spider named weasel. I'm doing a Stitch voice for him, which is very fun. I don't care if they think it's annoying or not. I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, has no respect for personal space, no understanding of, conventional customs. He's right out of the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And having a lot of fun with that. So, you know, I cast guidance on someone by smacking their ass. Like, get in there. and that sort of thing. It's very fun to kind of be the zany character to, again, stir some shit for the otherwise fairly serious adventuring party.
Gotcha. There's only room for one of those characters in a party.
So I was happy to step into that slot, and it's been well received as far as I can tell.
Did you step into a campaign that was already in progress, or did everybody kind of start anew?
I stepped into a campaign that was like two sessions in. So people were level two. They had a player that needed to drop. I kind of had this character idea from some other messing around I'd done, and was like, oh, I have an idea for like a gnome druid. And they're like, oh, that's perfect. The other person was playing a gnome. Like, we'll swap it right out. So it's didn't even have to change their mental concept. Yeah. So yeah, all right, mentally, instead of this gnome artificer, we're going to imagine we were with this gnome druid. Mm-hmm. The entire time. And they'd only played once or twice before, so that wasn't a hard transition to make.
Yeah.
That's been a blast. It's nice to have like a regular campaign TTRPG wise to play in.
Are you playing this in person, or is it over like a service?
No, it's on Roll20, gotcha. Unfortunately. I would love to game in person. It just
it's impossible though, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe at some point, but definitely not right now. But yeah, I tell you what, it is nice having Roll20 just do all the math for you.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I really, really knowing how easy it is online, while all the benefits of socially, being in person would suck some of the joy out of being in person for me.
The first time a wizard above level six casts fireball, you will curse every single, first off, they're going to take every, D6 from everybody at the table to do it.
Yep.
I remember David playing with Kyle and just, it's like, all right, so guys, we've got to pull our D6s to get this fireball out.
Come on, we're on a deadline. We gotta get this fireball out the door.
Yeah. Oh god!
I don't know how much damage I rolled. The table collapsed under the weight of the dice.
Yes, is that a second roll when they hit the floor? Yeah.
Oh, that's good. And is that considered advantage or disadvantage? So yeah, having a good time with that. I imagine there will be periodic updates from that as particularly interesting things happen. I got infected with some kind of fungus that's having mushrooms grow on my nose.
Perfectly appropriate for a swamp person.
Yeah, yeah, totally. If he picks all of them off, then they double. So like there was one, I picked it off and two sprouted. So I picked those off and then four sprouted. And then I picked all but one off and nothing happened. And then that one got picked off later and eight sprouted.
I've had that nightmare before.
Yeah.
Right. So,
Weird Good is insisting to the party that he doesn't need help and it's just boogers, because in his mind, that's better.
That's perfectly acceptable.
I'm just flicking boogers off, guys. We'll see where that goes.
Gross.
But yeah. Fun, gross Stitch/ Gollum character to play. Yeah.
D&D, so that's finally.
Mm-hmm. That's my tabletop play. I've been continuing to play Diablo 4. That game slaps. It is an excellent podcast game. Not a ton new to say about it. It is always a nice feeling when you get one of those like rare or unique or legendary, whatever drops that is, you know, the special ability doubles the power of a skill you're already using, or something to that effect. So there's always that little slot machine going in the background as you're crushing through dungeons.
Yeah.
That's a game that has been fun and has been fun with friends. And I might be able to use that to alley-oop over to David. I don't know.
Maybe. I was going to go to David anyway. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been playing Diablo. Funny how that happened.
We didn't plan that. It's just probability.
Exactly. We only use probabilistic transitions. So I've completed Act 1, and I'm, I think, well on my way to finishing Act 2. I've there's a place fairly early on where it branches, and in the, you know, two missions you have to complete, and I beat both of those missions. So yeah, I think I'm right at the end of Act Two. Man, this is a game that's really hard to, say a lot about, because it's very much a, the gameplay is the experience, if that makes sense.
What, you know, do you have like highlights from the build that you have in mind, or are you still in the mode of just grabbing whatever the highest number equipment is?
You know, I'm not doing a ton, with the actual equipment build at this point. Partially just because it's not exactly worth it to me before I get to end game. I'm going with a Flurry Rogue, which is the rogue ability that basically lets you kind of do a multi-attack. Everything in an arc in front of you, you attack. With most of my damage output coming from poison abilities.
Very cool.
I think probably the most interesting thing is that I'm not using an ultimate at all on this build.
How does that work? It's your ultimate.
Yeah, but I mean, there's not enough rows on the hotkey bar for it.
for your most powerful ability?
I mean, is it really your most powerful ability?
Definitionally.
I don't know. It's not your penultimate.
Yeah, no, the thing is, and this is something that's actually kind of weird to me in terms of how they decide to design this. You only have enough buttons, or, you know, slots effectively for one of each type of ability. And so I'm doubling up on, I'm using both the, it's called like Dark Shroud, which is basically damage reduction, and Poison Trap. And so that means something else has to go. And I don't know, none of the ultimates for the rogue are really all that exciting.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a problem for the Necromancer, which is the class I'm playing as well, because one of your slots has to be dedicated to summoning right. Your skeletons, right? Mm. Which is, so I actually have a node of my skill tree that I just am not using at all, so that I can fit both that and my ultimate onto my bar. So it is odd that they kind of built into the design are shorting you a slot. That is definitely annoying. I'm just surprised that the ability that got shorted on your end was the ultimate.
Yeah, it's weird. I think part of it is, so I don't know. I would say my biggest complaint overall with I want to say Resident Evil 4, Diablo 4 is the fact that the characters' available abilities aren't very wide. So, like, you know, at the ability tier where you get a trap, there is only one trap you can get. Mm-hmm. You know, it's whereas like Diablo 2, it's like, do you want fire traps or electric traps or blade traps? This is just like poison trap is the trap that exists. And so the problem with that is once it gets to the ultimates, it's, you know, if that specific thing in, you know, there's kind of one ultimate for each of the broad type of abilities you have. Mm-hmm. And if it just happens not to fit with your build, then, you know, then you don't have an ultimate. So
yeah, sorry about you.
Right. Yeah. So for example, in my case, you know, probably what I would go with is the trap ability, but since it's not poison damage, and that's what all of my build is built around maximizing, it's kind of useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess the one thing that makes that forgivable, because I agree, super annoying, is respecking is fairly painless the game. Other than the time spent puzzling out, you know, what skills to drop and what skills to add. I haven't heard anyone that's actually ran into a resource barrier to respecting. Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. My hope is I'm going to keep experimenting with it. I'm hoping as the seasons come around and the, expansions and stuff like that, I guess, I don't know what the opposite of dumbing down is, I guess smart up. So I hope they smart up the game a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Rogue is one of them I think could use some help. I think probably the biggest one is the Druid, just because it's so strongly, most people are going to spec into one of the forms you can shapeshift into. And mm-hmm. so for each of your abilities, there's usually literally only one ability for that form. If you're a werewolf druid, you literally are identical to every other werewolf unit spec.
Not too bad.
Yeah, it's if you're trying to role play the version of your character, you have very few opportunities to customize.
Yep. So yeah, that's probably my biggest complaint so far, honestly. So far the game itself seems pretty good. I've been enjoying the story. I think my only complaint with the story so far is just that it doesn't seem to have any connection to any of the previous games.
I was reading about this. Apparently people are like, no, go read a synopsis of Reaper of Souls, the expansion for Diablo 3. Like, there's a lot in there that sets this up. But it's like, that was how many years ago?
Yeah.
Also was like a middling expansion for a middling game.
Yeah. Those looking for story are going to have to dig to get all the setups.
Yeah. Yeah. We are almost to the first season. So that's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still hoping they cave on making you create a new character to participate in the season.
Yeah, there's still time.
It's also like if you're thinking of Diablo as an MMO, yes, it seems very frustrating to have to create a new character. If you're thinking of it as I guess an ARPG, that seems to be a bit more in the formula.
Yeah,
like you'd be hard pressed to find an ARPG that doesn't have elements of like, all right, we're gonna a season or I think they called them ladders before, whatever you want to call it.
Diablo, Diablo 2.
Notably Path of Exile and Last Epoch both do that same thing.
I think the problem with that though is that this game is basically what if we made Diablo an MMO in terms of almost all the gameplay decisions are towards making the game more similar to how MMOs play.
Mm.
So like, as the example with the very rigidly defined kind of cookie cutter abilities, they're very MMO style.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yep. So far it's pretty good. I do feel like at some point you would think my character would realize like, hey, instead of just, constantly chasing Lilith's tail, why don't I skip to this, thing I have marked in my guidebook as, Act 3, and maybe I can get there before her.
It's not plot armor. It's plot sequencing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I'm interested to see. I'm sure someone is eventually going to play the game backwards, and I really look forward to seeing that.
The uncomfortable truths that are revealed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Namely, that they never thought someone, or they never thought to design it so it makes sense if you play it backwards.
Mm.
That reminds me of the most recent Ghost Recon game was completely open world, so you could go straight to straight to the final boss, which I did, and which resulted in a cutscene where my character like screams at him for all these horrible things he did to him that he hasn't done to him.
Like,
you made me kill my best friend.
All right, glad I took him out. Now I gotta go kill my best friend.
So, but yeah, you know, good game. You know, kind of interesting world. I'm interested to see if the map makes more sense as it goes on, because right now it seems like this world is kind of the most boring Pangea.
Mm. I mean, they've all kind of been like that. I mean, you're just kind of, you know, going from one biome to the other.
Yeah, I think the thing is the previous games, you know, because they, you know, in effect, just, you know, in order to get to a new biome, it's like, oh, load up on the ship. You know, I think it was just kind of assumed that, you know, oh, you're going to, you know, a different region. Whereas this, it's just kind of a vaguely square-shaped continent that is, you know, divided up like a pie chart.
Mm.
Yeah, it does not become more sensical as you get further in the game. I can confirm.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, what type of weather will I see next, though.
What else you got?
That is all I got.
All right. I only have a little bit here. So I had intended to be able to bring Final Fantasy 16 this week. The circumstances conspired to make it so that was not possible. Hopefully by the time we reconvene the week after the 4th of July, I will have that. And that will be good and fun based on everything I'm hearing. I've got two very small things, one of which is just a PSA. The first of which is I played the demo for Lies of P. Because they are too cowardly to just call it Lies of Pinocchio. They're trying to trick people into thinking it is not a Pinocchio game.
They realized in focus groups that everyone hated that it was Pinocchio, but they'd already paid for the IP.
Paid for the public domain license to that story that is way older than copyright law. I wasn't impressed, like, aesthetically. I imagine there are people who will find the kind of clockwork robotic Bloodborne especially charming, you know?
You mean Steel Rising?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that game. Yeah. fans of Steel Rising will probably find something to like here. And, like, I don't know. There are it's not entirely as goofy. Like, you wake up, you're Pinocchio, and you're Pinocchio who is visually indistinguishable from Timothée Chalamet to the point where anytime blood or oil or whatever got on my character, I said, "Oh no, my Chalamet." you wake up in like this train that's crashed into this station of this place where all of these puppets, these kind of androids, have gone plum loco, I think is the term.
Wait, plum loco androids? You mean Atomic Heart?
Yes. And then you bloodborne
sorry
them. And then you bloodborne them to death until you get to a boss that I couldn't beat because I played this as part of a stream where I was covering demos from Steam Next Fest. It plays like a sloppy, not very tight Bloodborne, you know, like the I just I didn't care for it.
You mean Elden Ring? Sorry.
No.
Wow. Shots fired.
Like, it's right down to the having two different dodges. Like, when you're locked on, you do the quick step, and when you're not, you do the roll. Like, it is actionably Bloodborne in a way that I'm sure will appeal to a lot of people, but like, I needed it to be a little bit more additive.
Sure. Does it have the regain system?
No. At least not that That's I had seen bad. So far. Yeah, because the regain system is a really good idea.
They're testing the limits of if it ain't broke.
Yeah. The thing that made it feel most sloppy is the thing that most people have complained about, which is the dodge. It's just there's a like this weird delay on it. Like the iframes just do not feel like at all appropriate for what you are doing. Ended up getting snagged by a lot of a lot of attacks that I should have avoided. It felt good to hear other people say like, oh yeah, everybody fucking hates the dodge in this. However, hopefully they're going to change it. There's no guarantee that they will. As of right now, this kind of went from I'm gonna not have an opinion about it to I'll be really surprised if this holds up. Just because the demo did not impress me very much.
It's too bad because I mean, now even though it wasn't a great game, like what was the cyberpunk like robot-y?
You're thinking of the Surge?
Yeah. Was at least a different take on like the Soulsborne thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like Mortal Shell with the whole turn to stone thing was like, hey, you can make dodge different while still being dodge.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just a, I think you've hit on something, which is like each of those had something different. The Surge had limb targeting, Mortal Shell, obviously, with the petrification. Like, it's kind of not enough just to be like, hey, we're Bloodborne, but the theming is different. I think you gotta be a little bit more than that. I'm perfectly willing to be wrong about this. Like, a demo does not encapsulate everything. I could be reductive because I am seeing a reduced version of the product, but as of right now, just kind of like, so
that's, yeah, there's kind of a lose-lose for devs anyway, of doing a demo where it's like, all right, if they are excited about the idea and come in and love it, then they're exactly as likely to buy it as they were before. If they were excited about the idea and your demo does not perform perfectly, you can only make them less excited.
Yes. Or if they're on the fence, like, I don't know, it's pretty hard to win somebody over if you make a bad first impression with that. Like, you might actually lose people. Especially when your problem in a Souls-like is so fundamental as the dodge isn't there yet.
The only reason the dodge shouldn't be there is because you're out of stamina.
Yes. Yeah.
I am kind of excited for the Lies of P crossover with Wolong Fallen Dynasty.
That was very strange to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's going to make sense, but that doesn't mean it won't be entertaining.
I mean, it is fun and good for Souls-likes, not Souls-likes or whatever, to especially from smaller developers to kind of band together like that. Mm-hmm. I think that is a cool idea. Yeah, I don't know. I'll be curious to see how it I'll be curious to see how it articulates. It sounded like I was about to shit on it. I know nothing. So yeah.
Dishonored. That's the other game I could joke about the plot, the setting being similar to. Sorry, I knew there was one more.
Oh, yeah. And the other one that's more of a PSA, but I was browsing around the Apple App Store on my phone, which is something I don't do because the mobile game space has been a fucking nightmare for what it feels like 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real disappointing because that used to be something that brought me a lot of joy. I didn't realize that there was a sequel to What the Golf.
What?
That developer. Well, they made something for VR. I forget what it was. But on the phone, if you have Apple Arcade, you can get and download and play What the Car, which is a like racing game kind of thing where you are completing courses, but like with the golf, which is that really wacky golfing game where every hole, like every little level, is a different gimmick. Mm-hmm. You know, except it is a car. And I've not gotten very far in this, but it has brought similar amount of delight to me. And instead of just like revealing what your gimmick is when you go to like interact with it and see that like, oh, it's not my club that's moving, it's the world when I drag to do a hit. Here, your character, your car, or say the body of your car is always kind of launched into the level. Sometimes by a cannon, and it is revealed in a like a little fanfare what you are doing. So you'll press the button to launch, and it'll be like car with legs. And then you'll land, and your car moves by principle of walking, by principle of ambulation.
Great,
yeah, so yeah.
Please, please tell me there's a level that it's golf.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely has to be. Again, I haven't played very much of this. This is more of a PSA, less to like respond to it. The game seems perfectly delightful. It seems like there's going to be a lot of tread on those tires where the tires exist on the car. But like, I had no fucking idea this was out, and apparently it's been out for a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
Glad you found it.
I am too, because I've got something to play on my phone, and I've not paid attention to phone games. I mean, really, since Golf on Mars, maybe with that grappling hook game, I fucked around with that a little bit when you brought it, Dennis. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, or this is Spang, was the name of the grappling hook.
You
one.
Can't
yeah.
say that. Shh.
Sorry, no. I thought you finished it. I thought you wringed all the juice out of that one. Yeah. So
I did. It just sounds very impolite.
Yeah. Yeah. No. What the car? It seems good. I'm excited to see the creativity of the studio back on display. It's a shame happened to mobile gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it for me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. Jolly, you came up with a hell of a question. So what did you ask the nice people?
I asked, well, we all know about those perfect matchups of voice actor to character, but instead of that, we are going to see who would you cast as what character from what game that would absolutely wreck the tone. So an example would be like Pee-wee Herman is Corvo from Dishonored.
And I'll get us started here with Alexander, who says Wallace Shawn as Rex from Mass Effect. That is perfect. That is really good. Rex is a big, you know, it's a big warrior race kind of guy, and having the short bald guy from Princess Bride in there is good. Oh man. Dennis, what does Josh say?
Josh says, without putting too much thought into it, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Link. Nothing but grunts the whole game and no dialogue.
Hey, listen.
Oh, Arnold is not.
I know that's not Link.
Yeah, but it's still good.
Hey, listen, if you want to leave.
David, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, Jack Black as an enthusiastic announcer, any game.
That would be a perfect
funny thing
match.
Is, he actually was an enthusiastic announcer in Brutal Legend. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was. And he's also going to be Claptrap in the live-action Borderlands movie that's apparently coming out.
Okay.
I have very mixed feelings about learning that. Jack Black in anything is exciting. Borderlands in anything with talking is not exciting.
Yeah, I mean, after seeing him do Bowser, I trust him implicitly with literally anything.
Around the internet right now, there's like this whole thing about him like dressed up as Bowser singing the Peaches song live. There's like a clip of it flying around on the internet right now.
Jack Black's redemption arc from when people got really tired of him in the late 2000s and early 10s has been very heartwarming, because he has always been an incredibly charismatic person. Yeah.
Yep.
I do have to say, though, with this answer, I am now imagining him doing one of the one of the opening voiceovers from a From game, and it's pretty entertaining.
That would wreck the tone. Yes. Okay.
Yes, it would. Jala, what does Nick say?
Nick says Danny DeVito as Adam Jensen in Deus Ex Human Revolution. I never asked for this, indeed.
So anyway, I armed my Typhoon and I started blasting. That is really good. I mean, is Danny DeVito distinct from the Frank Reynolds character at all at this point? I don't know. that is his enduring legacy as Frank Reynolds. Callum says, don't know why it popped into my head, but Charlie Sheen as Kratos. maybe old trilogy Kratos, but sorry. Anything with Charlie Sheen makes me.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Peter say?
Peter says Justice Smith, like his character from the Dungeons and Dragons movie, but voice cast as Titus in FFX.
His D&D character would actually be pretty good as Titus. I think what you're thinking of is Justice Smith as the Quarry character.
Yeah.
As Titus in Final Fantasy X. Just a completely flat affect. Well, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, because doesn't he do that nervous chuckle somewhere in the quarry too at some point?
Ah, maybe.
I don't know. Anyway,
I was very poorly served by seeing Justice Smith by first seeing him in the quarry. That is a cool character. His performance is too flat for me.
Holy shit! The first place I saw him, now looking at Google, was Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, he was also him, in that.
I did not at all make that connection.
Wait, was he Pikachu? Because that would be amazing.
No, that was Ryan Reynolds.
Oh.
Which I would have accepted as an answer for this prompt. But no, he was the opposite of.
He was the main kid. Yeah. I completely forgot that.
Right.
So the quarry was not the first time that I saw Justice Smith.
Huh. No, I talk about disappearing into a character. Yeah, I never would have made that connection. Thanks, yeah. Google.
Let's see here. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I really like Anna Kendrick. She seems like a nice lady, but I picture her doing Lara Croft as a voiceover, and it's just funny to me. Something incredible. I don't know who this is, so I'm not sure how to do a voiceover, but... Something incredible happens and Laura gets hurt. Laura, that's like, whatever, man. I mean, I guess it hurts and all, but gotta just get on with it and stuff. I have no idea who this is.
She's the lead from the Pitch Perfect movie, so you gotta do like a Disney young woman voice. Yeah. I can't mimic that voice without coming off as incredibly sexist. So I'm not going to do it.
Jala, you're up.
No.
No. Jala, you're up. What does Sam say?
Sam says, Chie's voice actress from the original PS2 version of Persona 4 doing every other voice in the game as well.
I forget, is Chia's PS2 voice actress particularly bad?
I don't know.
I can't recall. I think my memory of the PSP version has supplanted that.
However, the thing about that though is that just like Chia's voice for every single character would still be wild. It doesn't even matter.
Yes. Like yeah, I suppose. David says, I would cast Gary Butterfield as Duke Nukem. and I'm not going to do an impression of that because I value our partnership.
So. But how high of a Patreon tier would we have to get to for him to do that?
Probably not very. It would actually probably be a really fun thing to give him. They'll do it on a duck stream. Make it a duck stream donation tier.
Right.
To get him to do that. Let's hear. Case says, I've got one actor, but he's been in two big recent releases. Ralph Ineson as Lorath in Diablo 4 and Cid in FF16. And I replace both with Charlie Day. Okay, so he's not casting Ralph Ineson as those characters. Replacing both of them. So taking the like gravelly, extremely deep gravitas of both of the of anything that Ralph Ineson will bring, and replacing it with like the squeaky screams of a Charlie
Day. With Luigi.
Dennis, what does Alex say?
Alex says, "I'm just imagining President Eden voiced by Gilbert Gottfried instead of Malcolm McDowell." Ah, face to face at last. It's high time we met.
President Eden from Fallout 3, the AI president that you meet heading the Enclave. Yeah. let's see, David, what does Dave say? I didn't do that on purpose.
Dave says, "Christopher Walken as Batman in Arkham Asylum."
And Jala posts best Christopher Walken moments in Batman Returns.
Yeah, like I literally pulled that up because, like, I was just like, he was actually in Batman. You have to actually, like, watch Christopher Walken in Batman Returns now.
Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, wait, who was he?
Huh?
Who was he?
Max Schreck or whatever, like the villain guy who killed Catwoman. Oh, wow.
Sorry, Max Schreck. Max Schreck was the German actor who played Nosferatu.
There you go.
Count Orlok, yeah.
Max somebody or another.
Yeah.
In that movie.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't making fun of you. That's just very funny.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, Christopher Walken would do a very good Count Orlok.
Yeah, that would be something.
Yeah. But good catch, reconfirming that he was in the universe. Don also says, it's been on my mind lately, so I'll go with Yeardley Smith, the voice actress who plays Lisa Simpson, as Ellie in The Last of Us, with Larry the Cable Guy as Joel.
Oh no.
You have I think that Yeardley Smith, God bless her, Lisa Simpson as a good character, like bringing Lisa Simpson's like incredibly harsh moralism into the role of Ellie, that is a bigger nightmare than having Larry the Cable Guy as Joel.
I don't care who you are, that's infected.
That was a good Larry the Cable Guy.
Thank you. I listen to his comedy on my headphones every night as I fall asleep.
Okay, yeah, just doing some neurolinguistic programming there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's not even his real name. Not even his real accent. Let's see here. I forget who was that. Was that you, Chala, who read that?
No.
No. Who was it who read the year? No, that was me. Hey, Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, "Until dawn, but every character is played by Jack Gleason." Jeffrey Baratheon?
Joffrey Baratheon from Game of Thrones. He's the shitty little boy king.
Oh, that's Jack Gleason?
I think Jack Gleason. I can't see Jack Gleason without thinking of Jackie Gleason, you know, from The Honeymooners.
Right.
is that really fucker's name?
I'm trouble getting over it. Yeah. Man. All right. That's unfortunate. Or maybe very fortunate. Maybe that was how he got into show.
Well, it is. It's got to be Game of Thrones, though, because look at the next line.
Yeah. Is it possible to kill off all the characters in one playthrough? Let's find out.
He does do a very good job of playing a little shit. Mm-hmm. David, what does Phil say?
Phil says, "Fran Drescher? Mm-hmm. Drescher as Bayonetta."
Yeah. Fran Drescher played the lead on The Nanny. She has an incredibly this is such a loaded sexist term, but it's accurate. Incredibly shrill voice. Mm-hmm. Like incredibly shrill New Yorker voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fran Drescher as Bayonetta. I don't know. I'd check it out. I watch a YouTube video of that.
Right.
Yeah. Jala, what does Jack say?
Jack says, "Swap the voice actors for Leon and Salazar in the original RE4. Merry Christmas, everyone."
No, you're small time. Austin says, "The Rock as Joker. The Rock as Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite." I guess he only has the one mode. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, and finally here, Dennis, what does Kian say?
They say, "Any Souls Maiden being replaced by a fairy from Breath of the Wild."
I can't remember what her voice actress sounds like. What the fairy sounds like.
I didn't know Zelda games sound really horny now.
Every fairy is horny for Link, so.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, so, fair.
But then also, there's one more that came in last minute. Greg says, Gilbert Godfrey as Shepherd.
That's a lot of dialogue.
Wait, is that male Shep or femme Shep or both?
It could be every one of them.
Why ask a question you already know the answer to, David? My answer is Tim Robinson as James from Silent Hill 2.
Oh, no.
Just going to leave it there. No impressions, just, Dennis, how about you?
I want to see Jerry Seinfeld narrate Fallout.
What's the deal with war? It never changes.
Oh, God.
David, how about you?
So actually, appropriately enough, Max Schreck as Kratos, by which I mean I want to see God of War as a silent movie.
Ooh.
Nice answer.
Like German impressionist silent movie.
Yeah. And Jala, how about you?
So I have to first say I'm surprised nobody said Nicolas Cage for anything.
Oh, yeah. We got
so
many responses.
Because he's immaculate in everything he does. How dare you?
He would elevate literally any role.
Especially like a guy in, was it Dead by Daylight? No.
Dying, oh, my God. You know what? I would love Nicolas Cage to be the adoring fan in Oblivion. That would be great. But anyway, that wasn't my answer. My answer is Pauly Shore as Albert Wesker in any Resident Evil entry.
I'm wheezing the tyrant, buddy.
I don't know. So I do not know. No movie stars, which may or may not have been apparent from these. But in terms of characters that I think would be ripe for messing with, I think Ada.
Okay.
Just because she's a character that so much trades on, you know, just not even being competent, just pretending to be competent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She makes terrible decisions. Yeah.
And so, like, any sort of character that undermined that whole persona when persona is all she has.
Oh, my God. The Goofy voice actor. Like, Goofy's voice as Ada.
Yeah.
Gorsh, Leon?
Gorsh.
Gorsh, Leon, I betrayed you again. good question, Jala. This was fun.
Yay, I did a good one.
Yay. Yeah. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to Facebook and search for the Duck Feet community. Just put that in there and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thanks again, Jala, for posting it.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm going to do mine first, just because the sheer magnitude of what is happening here is, mind-boggling. I did not expect. You walk into every Nintendo Direct with an idea of, you know, roughly what's going to happen. Figured, oh, they're going to do like a Pokemon expansion. There's going to be a Splatfest. Just, you know, you're making the like move on symbol with your hand, right? Just rolling your fingers, right? But like, as I am cleaning my cat's litter box, listening to the Nintendo Direct on my phone, and I hear music from Super Mario fucking RPG playing, I literally shouted, "What?" And nobody who knows English was an earshot. Nintendo is...
Greta, answer for this.
Explain. I know this game came out 20 years before you existed, 25 years before you existed. Nintendo is remaking Super Mario RPG, and it's coming out on November the 17th. Some people are being real dipshits about the fact that the art style is hewing close to the original. That's exactly what I want. I don't want like photorealistic Mario going around and attacking a birthday cake. I want these cartoons doing it. I never thought that Super Mario RPG would happen, either as a, you know, like a, I guess it came out to Virtual Console. It's legally complicated because it was a co-development between Square Enix and Nintendo. And like certain characters are still, you know, intellectual property of Nintendo or of Square Enix. So like we didn't get Geno in or Geno or Mallow in Super Smash Brothers. Right. But it's coming out. November the 17th. There's some hints of new mechanics in the trailer that they showed, and I couldn't be happier. And just because throwing grenades into the future is the best way to make sure something happens, like when this thing comes out, I think it'd be real fun to stream because I am incredibly nostalgic about this game. It is not perfect, but like this along with Final Fantasy IV, those were my first RPGs that I played, and it was real foundational. Oh, nice. For me. Yeah. Do any of you have experience with Super Mario RPG?
I played
Oh, go ahead, Joel.
I played it on emulator some number of years after the SNES was not extant anymore. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say. I did play it a good deal, but on emulator, and very, very positive memories of it. I would honestly, I'm excited for this to get a remake. I'm more excited by the possibility that that might lead to sequels.
Hmm. Now there's a cool idea.
We'll see.
Yes, please. I have watched Jen play Origami Kingdom on the Switch and then whatever the one on Wii was.
Super Paper Mario is what that was.
Yeah, there it is.
That game is underrated. I like that a lot.
It is a good one.
I should specify, I'm looking for sequels to Mario RPG that aren't dumbed down.
Yeah, so not like the Paper Mario.
Mario a lot. It just didn't, at least for me, tap the same.
The same kind of feeling, like that Square Enix kind of weirdness. Oh, also the composer is coming back to consult on the rearrangements, which is amazing. I mean, the music is like half the reason you play. I mean, any Square game from that era, but also this one. Yeah. Jala, what is happening? What's Google trying again?
Yeah, we ask ourselves yet again, gentlemen, what nonsense is Google up to now? And so the answer this time is tinkering with a product that would allow folks to play games on YouTube, allegedly called Playables. It will allow users to play games instantly from YouTube via streaming service from their mobile phone or PC. Essentially, this is replacement for Stadia, which shut down in January. So they shut down Stadia because it didn't gain enough traction. So I don't know why they think this will be any different. I guess because YouTube is more ubiquitous. Anyway, fun fact, Google was trying to sell the Stadia tech to Peloton for the bike company to gamify customer rides, but that didn't end up panning out. Nobody wants it.
It's really weird how even like a cash cow like Peloton could not. Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
They were like, nope, not going to happen.
Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. They're just hoping we'll forget.
Wait a second. This is just Stadia with glasses on.
Oh, those assholes. God, after really? All those people who like had their hearts broken as Google dashed their Stadia only projects on the rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only too late. I mean, how long has it been? You said in January it shut down.
Yeah.
It hasn't even been a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And my sister and her family definitely used Stadia all the time because that's how the kids would play games. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh. Hmm. Yeah. No, I stopped trusting Google with new products after they killed Google Reader.
I remember that. I think I was the one who reported on Stadia before it became a thing. And yeah, you had said it at that time.
Did I say that exact that exact thing? Yeah. I am jaded because of Google Reader.
Well, I think it was Google Glasses that you were talking about that time. But
maybe. Yeah. You have a much better memory for the things I say than I do.
Wait a second. This is just Google Reader with Google glasses on.
Oh my gosh. Dennis, what's happening in the world of television, the small screen?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out, man. So, you know, there's a whole trend right now of video games getting TV adaptations, and they're starting to get pretty good. Naturally, like any game that has like a strong narrative, you know, a world that you'd want to inhabit is probably going to get a shot. So why is Among Us getting a TV show?
I mean, a game show, maybe.
Maybe, oh, yeah. Like, I could see that.
Yeah, like a reality show would be really good. I can answer this because of simplicity of premise and because of a very distinct visual style. I think that is enough to leverage for it. I think that there are a lot of potential stories that they could bring to it. That said, it would probably be better as like, I don't know, a Flash animated series on Newgrounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If
there's enough for Among Us to feed it to an AI script writer and see what comes out. I guess.
Probably. That's a sick burn, but well earned, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think my pitch for an Among Us like franchise would be reality TV show, shot in like some international waters so that the imposter had to actually viciously annihilate people as they're trying to restart the boat's engine or whatever.
You're basically describing Danganronpa.
you beat me to it.
And look how successful that's been.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that bear has to be making some bank if he can build all those execution machines.
Monokuma, please.
Indeed.
I still insist that that bear is either Dang or Rampa. I'm not sure which.
I now, whenever I'm incredulous about something, am going to go, Monokuma, please.
Yeah. Better than the alternative.
True.
Yeah.
This is going, CBS Studios is making it. It's signed off on by the developer, obviously. And apparently the people behind Infinity Train, which I'd never heard of before.
Oh, that's
apparently is pretty good.
That's actually a good show. Mm-hmm. Like Animation mm-hmm. Geeks, so I know who are. That is strange. And that bumps this up a letter grade in anticipation, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Owen Dennis, I guess, is the guy behind that, which, hey, cool name. Mm-hmm. The animators is going to be Titmouse, which is known for Big Mouth and Legend of Vox Machina. So,
yeah, that's the Venture Brothers studio, too. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
One of those was good.
they seem to have the chops behind us. I just, man, this is out of left field.
Hmm. I don't know. Maybe. Could be good.
Well, in a year, we'll all be singing its praises, I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny just because the first big video game adaptation to come out after Last of Us is that Twisted Metal show, and that looks god awful.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Twisted Metal seems like it should be the easiest thing in the world to make.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The clips that I've seen look very embarrassing.
Yeah, allocate 90% of your budget to gore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the problem, is they're leaning into the comedy aspect of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like Will Arnett is Sweet Tooth.
Yeah. Anthony Mackie is wasted on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe get like what's his name? Cronenberg to direct it.
Yeah. Body horror from the endings. Yeah. David, what you got?
I got nothing.
Attaboy. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
But credit.
Thank you.
Buttoner than that. Sorry.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 463. We really appreciate you making the time. Just a reminder, we're not going to be here next week. Sorry to do that so soon after I was traveling, but I'm not going to make these nice folks record on a holiday. So just go listen to Jolla Chan's. Jolla Chan's place. There we go. You got me second guessing myself. go check that out there. What can people expect to see this Friday again?
All right. So the last topical episode was on body dysmorphia and gender dysphoria. And that episode has been getting a lot of discussion. A lot of people have been saying it's very insightful. So that's the last topical episode. The next media episode is going to be on Metroid Fusion, and that one drops on July the 7th. So that will be 1 week from the release of this episode.
Nice. So go check that out at jollachan.place. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, God. I'm paralyzed.
It's really not that hard. My name in the Zencaster is Jolla Chan in Places. I mean, it's like...
No. So what gets me is Jolla Chan's Place versus Jolla Chan.place. Like, the possessive S is what gets me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jolla.chan.place.
Yeah. /podcast- Yeah.
In.
Dennis, where can people find you at Gen Con again?
Yeah, at booth 42, and you will find Lauren there. I will be trying to just bask in a little bit of her glow.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And I mean, for this show, you know how to help out a podcast. It's all really appreciated. I do streams on Twitch at the Duckfeed Twitch channel. That's just Duckfeed TV. That's all the stuff. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in the Deck of Wonders Discord.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Jolla Chan, in any place I can be found.
As long as I spell it right. Cool. Or say it right.
Or whatever you're doing.
All right, who has titles?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Gorsh, Leon, I betrayed you again.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, the one I want to have was, hey, listen, but that's entirely the voice, yo.
Yes. I have Oak Furniture and Hard Candy. We're all surfing on lava. And some kind of Gatormancer. Dennis, what you got?
I had Surfing on Lava as well.
Okay.
I also had Gorsh Leon. Pretty good. I also had another exclamation. Oh, no, my Chalamet. Yeah, what did I say? Yes, Chalamet.
Oh, no, my ShamWow. Yeah.
What was your first one on there?
Surfing on Lava, Gorsh Leon, and then Oh No, my Chalamet.
It has to be Gorsh Leon. I betrayed you again.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, cool. All right, it is decided.